Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70 plus exhibits, first class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
The Bureau of Reclamation recently announced an increase in Central Valley Project 2024 water supply allocations. After below average precipitation in January, Reclamation announced an initial water supply allocation for CVP on February 21st. Mid to late February storms have since improved hydrological conditions, particularly for Northern California, allowing for a more robust water supply allocation. Thanks to the improved hydrology, they are pleased to announce a bump in water supply allocations for the Central Valley Project, according to California Great Basin Regional Director Carl Stock. He says while the series of storms in Northern California improved the water supply outlook, a number of factors, particularly anticipated regulatory constraints throughout the spring, continue to limit the water supply allocation for south of Delta agriculture. In recognition of recent efforts to develop a south of Delta drought plan, Reclamation is reserving approximately 83,000 acre-feet of water currently in the San Luis Reservoir that will contribute to a drought reserve pool and is not considered as a volume of water available for this year's water supply allocations. Additionally, approximately 185,000 acre-feet of rescheduled water from the 2023 water year, also stored in the San Luis Reservoir, is not included in the 2024 water supply allocation. Based on current hydrology and forecasting, Reclamation has announced increases for North of Delta contracts, South of Delta contractors, and Front Division contractors. The California Department of Food and Agriculture's Pest Exclusion Branch is announcing two vacancies on the Nursery Advisory Board. The board is composed of 12 voting members, each representing an establishment with a valid California license to sell nursery stock. No two members shall represent the same organization. Members will represent a wide spectrum of the nursery industry, and a board will be geographically representative of the nursery industry in California. The term of office for board members is 4 years. Members typically meet twice a year, but can meet more frequently if needed. The members receive no compensation, but are entitled to payment of necessary traveling expenses in accordance with the rules of the California Department of Human Resources. In addition, the board includes up to 9 non-voting ex officio members from the County Agricultural Commissioner and Sealers Association, the University of California, and groups affiliated with the nursery industry. The mission of the Nursery Advisory Board is to grow and maintain strong relationships between CDFA and the nursery industry in order to secure the industry's future. The board facilitates communication between state and federal regulators and the nursery industry, and it advises CDFA's Nursery Services Program on policies, fees, and other issues concerning nurseries and nursery stock. Individuals interested in being considered for this board appointment should send a brief resume to Christina Weber, board supervisor, by April 25th. For more information and for her email, contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture. N2OF Incorporated, a pioneer agri-food tech company offering sustainable solutions for agriculture and plant-based food, previously announced that the California Department of Pesticide Regulation registered for use Safe Food LTD's pre-harvest treatment called Field Protect, based on its compliance with the California laws and regulations pertaining to pesticide regulation. The approval now extends the use of the product in California from exclusively post-harvest processes to include pre-harvest applications, which significantly broadens Safe Food's potential market reach. The company says they believe this marks an important step forward for Safe Foods in providing food safety and reducing waste from field to fork, paving the way for its potential commercial expansion in California. The company believes entry into the California agricultural sector, which generates substantial revenue and leads in organic production in the United States, places Safe Foods in a favorable position within the sustainable agriculture market. Field Protect is designed to meet the stringent environmental and safety standards set by the CDPR, demonstrating the company's commitment to providing eco-friendly solutions that benefit growers, consumers, and the environment. And according to the California Department of Agriculture, in 2022, California generated over $59 billion in market value from its diverse range of products. And in 2021, agricultural exports increased 7% from 2020 to $22.5 billion, while organic product sales reached $14 billion, marking a 16.4% rise from the previous year. The company believes that California's commitment to sustainable farming on over 2.13 million acres provides an ideal backdrop for Field Protect's introduction. Early reports in California indicate that this year's stone fruit crop may start harvesting slightly earlier this season. Last year was the latest crop they've ever seen, so they're in advance of that by maybe 7 days, according to John McClarty of HMC Farms. He says their company will start harvesting in early May. That said, with less than 2 months to go before harvest, all eyes are on the weather, which could have a significant impact on the timing of the crop, depending on what happens. He says he thinks California is at the very bottom end of adequate chill hours and says it's been a decent off-season for the trees, but not spectacular. The volume of the crop, though, is still to be determined. At this point in the season, two weather systems could impact California's stone fruit season, frost and hail. He says they're getting towards the end of that time when they're worried about frost and they're just getting into watching for hail. He adds that so far, it looks like an average looking crop that's possibly better on the front end compared to last year, which was affected slightly at the start of the season by frost damage. As for demand, McClarty expects it to be good. Stone fruit is one of the last seasonal items, so that builds excitement for their products, he says. Researchers at the University of California, Davis recently unlocked new molecular pathways in the development of new fungicides. A research team discovered the chemical Esbelin prevented fungal infections in apples, grapes, strawberries, tomatoes, and roses, according to a news report from the university. Researchers believe blocking autophagy, a process for all fungi, plants, and animals to recycle cellular components and remove toxic waste products, would prevent fungal infection. The research team selected Esbelin out of 2,700 chemicals from a library of Food and Drug Administration-approved compounds. UC Davis said the research team observed Esbelin's ability to prevent fungal infections on many different plant species. It also shows some curative potential, too. According to UC Davis, the research team needs to conduct further studies on Esbelin's efficacy. The research team also said it will continue to use its screening process to evaluate future chemicals to further prevent autophagy.
My Ag Life is brought to you by ICL Growing Solutions, a leading global fertilizer manufacturer and exclusive miner of polyhalite, marketed as polysulfate. Learn more about ICL's cutting-edge crop nutrition solutions at icl-growingsolutions.us.
Phytophthora fungi are present in almost all citrus orchards. Under moist conditions, the fungi produce large numbers of motile zoospores, which are splashed onto the tree trunks. The Phytophthora species, causing gamosis above ground and root rot below ground, develops rapidly under moist, cool conditions. Given the flurry of rain California has received, it's safe to assume that higher than average moist conditions are present. All the more reason to check for instances of Phytophthora.
One of the things that farmers can see right now is, you know, old gamosis wound on the trunks and the bark, reactivating basically because of the moisture. So the moisture kind of like, hey, it's time to wake up basically. Is this enough water for us to basically reproduce and get our spores out there? So during this time, you see those wounds being reactivated. And that's what we observed actually last week in the field in Southern California.
That was Hung Kim Doan, Small Farms and Specialty Crop Farm Advisor with UCCE in Riverside County. He said Phytophthora on citrus trees can lead to secondary infections, which can damage bark, and that opens the tree up to be even more vulnerable.
You know, all these other things come in and start eating the plants, basically. And, you know, they reduce the productivity of the plants, basically, to transport water, nutrients, and stuff as well. So definitely, you know, it's something that you have to take care of actively. And some grower basically will chip off the Phytophthora, the lesions and stuff, and basically torch the plants. That's one way you can basically manage that. But definitely right now when it rains, you can't really do any of that. So you just kind of wait till it dries up and then basically manage the disease.
Typical management for Phytophthora involves monitoring and treatment with cultural control, and there are also organically acceptable methods. Management for the current growing season, however, might look a little different, Doan said.
People might rethink how they basically establish orchard or how they increase basically soil allowing the soil to be increasing drainage in the soil, basically. Phytophthora disease can be managed culturally by reducing irrigation, right? So when the water hit the trunks and the barks, that creates a moist, wet environment where Phytophthora, which is a water mold, can reproduce and, you know, can infect the plants. So, you know, reducing or changing your irrigation, the way you irrigate, have a huge effect on gamosis, and also increasing the, you know, reducing the wetness level of the soil also increase, not overwatering basically, especially in a drought condition like this. And if the plant is healthy, right? So if you add enough fertilizer, if you add enough nutrient, they can basically fight off infections. So like if a couple of rootlets or roots get attacked, it's okay. They can grow a new one, right? It's when the plant's like, you know, in a drought condition or like when it's stressed out by salt and other issue, when disease can take off. Disease, including Phytophthora, is a rare occurrence. It's not a norm, right? You don't go to citrus orchards, see all the disease, all the trees are disease. It's a rare occurrence. And if you manage the environment, you can manage the disease, basically. Especially with this rain, managing it by basically monitoring it, right? So you need to know what trees is infected and how to basically remove that infection when that happens. So like, you know, when it dries up, you should remove the infection and keep checking on the trees, repeating it. One of the things that our grower does is she numbers every trees, so she knows exactly on what block it is and how it spreads. So tracking the progression of it, so she number them. That way she can check on them on a monthly basis, say, hey, this one, you know, the lesion is healing, things like that. That really helped her out her management, and she's an organic grower. So
Doan recommends when dealing with Phytophthora to always consult a second opinion, whether that's with a farm advisor or a PCA.
You know, we confirm it in the lab, you know, we play it out to see if it's there. And then basically, like any disease, if you manage it in time and don't let the disease progress, it shouldn't be a problem. So, you know, even with this infection occur, right, if you manage it and you slow it down and you stop it, you know, the tree can recover. But if you let it basically girder the whole tree, you know, the whole bark, the whole trunk, then the tree is not going to make it. So the way you basically be on top of your game, if you see it, identify that, check up on that trees and basically treat that trees. So allowing the exposed area to dry out too. So, you know, that's one way. Increasing canopies, you know, by pruning out trees, letting more air through for drying out is also a good way that farmers can manage that. There's a lot of farmers that increase soil drainage. That's the thing I mentioned, because Phytophthora that cause gamosis also cause root rot. And if you increase soil drainage, you know, by adding gypsum, the right amount of gypsum, incorporating that in the soil, you know, things like that can help the soil basically breathe.
Additionally, systemic fungicides can control Phytophthora gamosis, and copper sprays can be used to protect against infection. Chemistries are currently being researched at UC Riverside in an attempt to find more solutions for growers to reduce disease resistance. You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
USDA and other federal agencies confirmed that an unknown number of dairy cattle in Texas and Kansas dairy farms have become sick with highly pathogenic avian influenza. During the past 2 years, highly pathogenic avian influenza has led to infections and depopulation of more than 115 million chickens and turkeys in commercial and backyard poultry flocks. However, now HPAI appears to have jumped species to affect a small number of dairy herds in southern and plain states. The Texas Department of Agriculture cited that a mysterious disease has been working its way through the Texas panhandle before USDA officials identified the illness as a strain of HPAI. The Texas Department of Agriculture stated three dairies in the state had been affected. The Kansas Department of Agriculture also reported that at least two commercial dairy operations were affected there. American farmers might plant less corn than last year, but will still likely be larger than what USDA previously anticipated. That's according to data from the March 2024 Farm Futures Grower Survey. Total corn and soybean acreage will likely vary minimally from last year. Growers expect to plant 92.4 million acres of corn this year, down 2.3 million acres or 2.4% from last year. Soybean acreage is forecast to be 2.4 million acres or 2.9% higher than last year's 86 million acres. This is almost a one-for-one trade-off between corn and soybean acres from last year. If realized, that would bring the total corn and soybean acreage planted this year to 178.6 million acres, or the third largest combined corn-soybean acreage on record. Last year, farmers planted 178.2 million acres of corn and soybeans. Growers still anticipate USDA finding more winter wheat acres compared to last year. The Federal Trade Commission has issued a report on the causes behind grocery supply chain disruptions resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. The report revealed that large market participants accelerated and distorted the negative effects associated with supply chain disruptions. The FTC's report also examined how supply chain disruptions affected competition among retailers, wholesalers, and producers, as well as the impacts on consumers and businesses. The report found that consumers felt the negative effects of supply chain disruptions in the form of skyrocketing prices for groceries and product shortages for essentials like toilet paper. Notably, consumers are still facing the negative impact of the pandemic's price hikes, as the commission's report finds that some in the grocery retail industry seem to have used rising costs as an opportunity to further raise prices to increase their profits, which remain relatively elevated today. As the pandemic illustrated, a major shock to the supply chain can have cascading effects on consumers, including the prices they pay for groceries, according to FTC Chair Lena M. Khan. As the report explains, supply chain disruptions did not equally impact every retailer, wholesaler, or producer. Instead, smaller firms, especially smaller grocery retailers, disproportionately face difficulties obtaining products compared to larger firms. Some larger firms are better able to protect their product supply compared to smaller competitors. The pandemic also prompted some larger firms to consider buying manufacturing suppliers, which potentially threatens to make certain supply chains even more concentrated in the future. Taken together, the report's findings reveal how supply chain bottlenecks can leave markets exposed to supply chain shocks, and that those shocks in turn can allow major firms to entrench their dominance. The report's findings stem from orders that the FTC issued in 2021 under Section 6B of the FTC Act, Walmart Incorporated, Amazon Incorporated, Kroger Company, CNS Wholesale Grocers Incorporated, and others. The report highlights several key insights regarding market structure and business conduct among grocery retailers, wholesalers, and producers, as well as their effects on consumers. The highlights include grocery retailer profits rose and remain elevated, food and beverage retailer revenues increased to more than 6% over total costs in 2021, higher than their most recent peak in 2015 of 5.6%. Large purchasers sought favorable supplier allocations. Some companies, most often larger ones, reimposed strict delivery requirements on their upstream suppliers during the height of the pandemic and threatened fines for noncompliance, pressuring suppliers to favor them over rivals. In some cases, suppliers preferentially allocated product to the purchasers, threatening to fine, giving larger companies a competitive advantage over smaller ones. Excessive consolidation, recognized as a liability. During the pandemic, some retailers sought to diversify their supplier base, particularly of private label goods, as firms recognize the risks associated with having fewer supplies available. Some firms buying goods into markets with fewer supplies even began exploring whether to build or acquire manufacturing capacity to reduce their exposure to concentrated markets. Decrease in promotional spending. During a pandemic, manufacturer promotional spending on items in short supply declined. Companies employing more than traditional grocery retailing models that relies on manufacturer promotional spending to lower prices for products sometimes faced higher prices compared to other companies. The commission voted 3-0 to issue the staff report. The Federal Trade Commission develops policy initiatives on issues that affect competition, consumers, and the U.S. economy. USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs Jenny Moffitt describes the intent of the Agricultural Marketing Services Federal State Marketing Improvement and Micro Grants for Security Programs.
Funding made available through the Federal State Market Improvement Program. The goal of this program is to implement the efficiency and performance of food marketing systems within the United States. This program has helped farmers tackle marketing barriers, find new opportunities, and to establish best practices. In addition, we have the Micro Grants for Food Security Program, and it is focused on increasing the quantity and quality of locally grown food through small-scale gardening, herding, and livestock operations. The program is really targeting food insecurity communities in Alaska, Hawaii, Hawaii and the U.S. territories that have significant levels of food insecurity and important significant quantities of food as well. An example of a success of this program is at the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. They were able to award a grant to a family that freeze-dries Alaskan fruits and vegetables. They used this funding to purchase a high tunnel and a freeze dryer. They were able to increase their gardening space and now provide bi-weekly food deliveries to families, supplying more than 18 people in their remote area.
The Federal Aviation Administration has issued an exemption for drone swarm agriculture, a method of seeding and spraying crops at a fraction of the traditional cost. Hylio, a Texas-based drone manufacturer, successfully applied for an FAA exemption to allow fleets of drones weighing 55 pounds or more to fly together. It's the first exception of its kind for machines that carry what the company calls a meaningful payload and makes the process competitive with traditional tractors and seeding rigs. On average, you're spending a quarter up front on a capital cost to buy the machinery, and the operating cost is about a quarter or maybe a third of what you'd spend for the more traditional stuff, according to Arthur Erickson, Hylio CEO. Under previous rules, a single drone required a pilot and another person acting as a spotter. Because of weight limits in flight, it took a long time to cover large fields.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.